Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
We've long been told the trade-off for having flock surveillance cameras watch us out in these streets is that they help deter car thefts. Well, Denver's cameras were down in April, and car thefts weren't. Our Spencer Soysher has that.
It's hard to know what's going to happen until it happens.
We've dramatically dropped auto theft with the use of these cameras.
Last October, Denver Mayor Mike Johnston was so sure Denver needed to keep its flock cameras on that he went around the city council a second time to unilaterally extend the city's camera contract.
If you were to shut off the cameras, what do you think the city of Denver would lose?
I think we would see increases in auto theft. I think we would see increases in violent crime.
Now, because Denver did turn off the cameras, we can quantify how valuable the cameras are. When Denver's contract expired with Flock in March, the city pivoted to a new provider. But there was a lapse. No cameras were up for the month of April. Johnston predicted increases in violent crime. We haven't asked for those records yet. But we do have data now on auto theft numbers for April of 2025, when Denver's Flock cameras were on, to April 2026, when the Flock cameras were off. When they were on in 2025, Denver police say 439 vehicles were stolen. In 2026, with the cameras off, 313 were stolen. A 29% decrease in auto theft over the same month a year later.
As a deterrent value, it's hard to place a value on that, really.
Cale Gould is with the state's Auto Theft Prevention Authority, which says auto theft is down all over the state right now. While flock and license plate readers have gotten credit from the mayor for a drop in crime, there have been changes to state laws, too.
There's not a single reason. It's a hugely large collaboration of things.
Gould says the cameras are most valuable in investigations. With flock cameras available in April 2025, DPD cleared 13% of auto theft cases by arrest. In April 2026, without them, just 3%.
Probably like to see a longer period of time, be able to draw any conclusions.
As of earlier this week, Denver's Axon cameras meant to replace Flock have not been turned on, so we'll have a larger sample size to work with soon. Progressive Councilmember Serena Gonzalez-Gutierrez, who's been pushing to eliminate the cameras, said she was not surprised by this data, and the justifications for the cameras have been, quote, seldom tied to objective data. DPD stood behind the cameras as a helpful investigative tool, and Flock said this data, quote, tells you almost nothing because it's just 1 month.
Well, I wonder how long they think we'd have to turn them off before we could learn something. I mean, I suppose we will learn more as time goes on.
Yeah, and we're going to put in a records request as well to see what the violent crime has been during that stretch when they're down. But because these haven't been put up yet, the new Axon cameras, we'll actually get the month of May as well. We'll file that records request, 2 months of data plus the violent crime as well. We'll be able to get a clearer picture of what's going on here.
I wonder if the people doing the criming just don't watch the local news, so they didn't realize that it was basically the purge.
That would help them.
Yeah. All right. Spencer Soysher, thank you. It's suing season again. When the legislative session ends at the state capitol, the new laws passed by Democrats take effect, and then their opponents sue to stop them. Happens like clockwork every year. Today, some Republican state lawmakers joined the Colorado State Shooting Association in their latest attempt to block incoming regulations on gun shops. This year, Democrats passed a new law requiring gun dealers to improve security, report stolen or lost firearms to the state, and to keep records of gun sales, or else face fines of up to $75,000. The bill's sponsors say dealers have their own specific role to play in preventing gun violence. But gun rights advocates say the new regulations will drive small gun shops out of business. Today, the State Shooting Association sued over the record-keeping provision in the bill, argued that government officials shouldn't be able to access records of gun purchases without a warrant.
It treats every gun owner as a potential suspect and gives the government access to sensitive personal information that should be protected by the Constitution. Law-abiding citizens' records can be searched simply because a government official decides to ask for them. That is exactly the type of government intrusion the Fourth Amendment was written to prevent.
Republican State Rep. Ava Flanell, who you heard from there, is also a firearms instructor and a CSSA member. This is not CSSA's first lawsuit rodeo. They're also currently suing the state over an excise tax on guns and ammo and a law requiring gun buyers to complete training courses before buying certain semi-autos. The majority of voters in Colorado are unaffiliated. They can choose to return either the Democratic or the Republican primary ballot. What if they didn't have to choose? What if everyone got the same ballot with the same candidates and you just kind of chose cafeteria style? Our Marshall Zellinger explains the effort to open up Colorado's primaries.
Chocolate chip? Red or blue?
Besides making you crave dessert, this new political ad is meant to draw attention to Colorado's limiting primary system.
Two flavors, pick a team or sit it out.
The point of our ad is to have a humorous, lighthearted way to poke fun at our current semi-closed primary, where if you're an independent voter, you get to pick one or two ballots, Republican or Democrat.
Landon Mascarenhas is head of Courageous Colorado, a group testing the waters to see if Colorado voters, particularly the 2 million unaffiliated voters, would get behind a ballot issue to open Colorado's primaries to one ballot with all candidates.
Every voter gets the same ballot during the primary season, and they can build the ballot the way they want. They can actually do a Republican for governor, a Democrat for attorney general, Green Party for state legislature.
I am a Republican, always will be a Republican, and I don't know if it'll help us or not, but I know one thing, we can't go any further down than we are now.
Dick Wadhams is former chair of the Colorado Republican Party. The GOP is considering closing its party primary and picking candidates with the few thousand who show up to the Republican Party convention.
It would be horrible for 900,000 Republicans who won't be able to participate, and it would be horrible for 2 million unaffiliated who would only get the Democratic ballot in the primary.
California most notably has an open primary, where voters last week received this lengthy ballot for governor. Voters pick one, and the top two advance to the general election in November, regardless of affiliation. And in a state where there are twice as many Democrats as Republicans, the top two candidates were one Democrat and one Republican.
Do you think this is Republicans' way to get back to relevance in the state?
It might be, but the real issue for me, Marshall, is that both parties have been going to their extremes.
We think it's a great time to have this conversation during the primary, when a lot of people are going to be asking, isn't there a better way?
Where's the money coming behind this effort? The group is funded really by every side. The left-leaning Arthur Blank Foundation, the guy who started Home Depot and owns the Atlanta Falcons. It's funded by the right-leaning El Pomar Foundation in Colorado Springs. And of course, Kent Thierry's group, the former DeVita chair who has helped overhaul Colorado's election system to include unaffiliated voters, Kyle.
So I guess my question, Marshall, is why do rich people want this so much?
I think that's a great question. I wish I could get into the head of a rich person, because not being one myself, I will say it's probably to have a wider swath of candidates that perhaps they can, I'll stop there. I'll put the dot, dot, dot there.
The dot, dot, dot. Well, we can continue to look into that. All right, Marshall Zellinger, thank you. Let's do some good together in Colorado. Your Word of Thanks microgiving campaigns have raised $18 million over 6 years. And this week, in collaboration with our Nine Cares Colorado Shares food drive, let's help feed families in far northwest Colorado. The nonprofit Lift Up of Rout County is fighting hunger and the stigma that sometimes comes with accepting help. Lift Up serves 1 in 7 families in Rout County. They've seen their food bank visitors spike by 2/3 in recent years. Often the folks who come in are working at least one job. And some struggle with complex feelings about getting food from a no-pay grocery store. So they even have a grab-and-go section up front where somebody can come in, get a meal for their family, and leave without having to interact with staff, be there long, fill out any paperwork. Sue, the woman in charge at Lift Up Rout County, told me that the cost of living there in and around Steamboat is really high. It's tough for people to make ends meet. And they're trying to get past that stigma that the food assistance is only for the poorest of the poor. She tells her neighbors in need, "We have enough for them and for you." And we have enough people who chip in weekly to these micro-giving campaigns that we can make a real difference for that nonprofit in northwest Colorado. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to get the link to donate. Even $5 helps. And we're coming up. We are so close to 8,000 of you signed up to make a monthly donation to the Word of Thanks Fund. Put in your info one time, pick a donation amount. It's automatically split every month among all the nonprofits we feature. And lately, that has added almost $50,000 to each weekly campaign. Poetry program is helping teens find their voice again after some have done time in the justice system. And with football fans taking over Denver, easier than ever to find good news, not always in English. That's next. Chris Bianchi, are we done with soup weather for the season?
Well, you tell me. So this is the debate. I issued a soup weather watch for Sunday. Upper 60s, cloudy, mainly cloudy, maybe a few blips of sunshine, a few isolated showers. What do you think?
Soup.
Soup?
Soup.
Okay.
Soup.
Dust off those ladles. We got a soup weather watch for Sunday. Mostly cloudy. Again, a few blips of sunshine, not a ton of rain, if any, in Denver, but cool. And it's kind of hard to believe, considering that today was our third day at or above 90 degrees so far this year. So to me, it counts, especially for June, right? June, we don't get too many cloudy 60s days. So I think after a 90-degree day, that counts. A few showers, a few rumbles of thunder, southeast Colorado, Bakke County, as well as on up into Prowers County, a few showers and storms. Some of these could turn severe. In fact, did have a report of quarter-sized hail on Raton Pass about an hour ago. A few showers in southeast Colorado. We stay dry tonight. Then tomorrow, two cold fronts. First one in the morning, a second one tomorrow afternoon between 5 and 10 p.m. That'll lead to some of that tenuous, but I think acceptable soup weather coming up on Sunday with just a few showers around. Again, it's not going to be a super soaker kind of day, nothing close to that. Just kind of cool, gray, and a little unsettled on Sunday in particular. And it's really our only chance for rain in the 7-day forecast. Upper 70s for tomorrow, 60s on Sunday, and then we're going to be back in the upper 70s on Monday. And then look at that on Wednesday, kind of a blowtorch for us on Wednesday as we get right on the edge of a big ridge of high pressure across the West Coast. So mid-90s on Wednesday, and it'll be around 90 for the rest of the week. So again, to me, you got that 60s on Sunday, it counts as a soup weather day.
We'll count it. A youth advocacy group is proving that words can change lives. Through theater, young people are finding their voice and in some cases, rewriting their future. Our Byron Reed has that.
They say I'm too distinct, that everything I do will be seen.
Words can be powerful.
But then my ancestors shout, who you are, you're meant to be.
But for graduating high school senior Trinity Johnson, her personal words come from a time when she was weak.
I had a lot of problems with authority growing up, so I did a lot of time incarcerated. I did 3 years.
The 17-year-old is a poet from Mirror Image Arts, a Denver-based nonprofit using a program called Restorative Theater to help at-risk youth get back on track.
Poetry was really a good outlet for me. I like to write. I've always been a writer. So finding something that I could do that works my brain but also helps me express my emotions was very detrimental to me, losing all faith in all my dreams.
Now she says she's using her word center stage to connect with others.
Because I feel like if I feel this way, there's probably one or two people that feel exactly the same.
That connection is what the youth advocacy group is built on, creating safe spaces where young people have their voices heard.
Especially in the carceral system, youth almost have their voice completely stripped away from them.
Teresa Mazza is the executive director of operations of Mirror Image Arts, where they're trying to prevent a pipeline to prison.
In Colorado, we know that there could be upwards of 20,000 youth that are system impacted. Right here in our Center for Restorative Theater at Mirror Image Arts, we have diversion programs. We also have programs for youth that are re-entering community.
For many teens here, that resource can be life-changing.
When I came to MIA, the adults here were like, you need help? Okay, we can figure this out for you.
It's such a just calm, active space with where I know I can be heard, respected, and listened to.
Hardships pass, but every boat I'm in, I sink.
For Johnson, finding her voice through poetry meant finding her future.
I really want to go to college for criminal psychology. I want to be a behavioral health specialist for juveniles.
For next.
I'm just really excited to kind of put my art out there for everybody.
Yeah. I'm Byron Reed.
Mirror Image Arts will host an upcoming performance at Dazzle in downtown Denver, June 16th.
Danas je prva utakmica za Bosnu za svjetsko prvenstvo.
Precisely. Our World Cup kickoff edition of our Friday Search for Your Good News required us to brush up on our Bosnian. That's next. Nothing like the World Cup to bring together people of all cultures. And today we stumbled on a bunch of Bosnians showing their national pride in Denver as their team took on Canada. So we introduced them to our favorite Friday question. What's your good news?
It's just a way to bring people together. I think sports, especially the World Cup being in North America this year, brings a reason for people to come down here and talk to people they may have never talked to before, make some new friends, and just give them a reason to be social. My good news is that my grandparents are alive and healthy, and they live with me, so I get to see them every single day when I wake up. before I go to work.
My good news is I'm going to LA to go watch the Bosnia game.
Godišnica mi je bila s curom.
And that is?
Yesterday was my anniversary with my girlfriend.
I'm excited first for a country that's been through a lot to be here today and that we are all supporting from all over the world.
Danas je prva utakmica za Bosnu, za svjetskom prvenstvu I baš mi je drag I ne mogu čekat više da ih gledam I da igraju.
I think it's just that unity that we have where it's we came from a different country because of a war that happened and we're all here together to kind of celebrate in that we survived but also that we're here and that we're rebuilding.
Moja dobra vijest je da sam ovdje sa svojom obitelji, kćerkom I zetom I da slavimo bosansku reprezentaciju I svjetski kup I navijat ću I za Sjedinjene Američke Države I sretna sam da smo zdravi I zajedno danas. But most of all, I'm happy for being with my family today.
That Bosnia-Herzegovina flag slaps too. We're back with your feedback in English next. Feedback from Tom in Denver who says, I'm watching all the political ads. I think it's great that the Pope is endorsing Manny Rutino. I thought the same thing when I saw that ad, which leads us to our next from Judy. Is there a plan for Marshall to put truth testing on those running for public office on those ads? Yes, we will continue to do truth tests. And I think we should examine some of these ads that imply endorsements from public figures who probably have not actually made those endorsements. Erica writes in on the question of the day, as brought up by meteorologist Chris Bianchi. Whether you can have soup weather in summer. Erica says it's always soup weather, always, just depends on the soup. Okay, where are we on chilled soup, like a nice gazpacho? Mallory, where are we on chilled soup? She says disgusting, I'm with her. We have unity. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.